Mark Collier here with Four Timeless Matters Radio. So we're off, and we're going to talk about a couple things today. Number one, the story that I had written for, I wrote it for WCPO Insider, Channel 9, on a freelance basis, basically breaking the story that Cheryl McCafferty is going to be let out of prison as early as when I had talked to the Office of Probation and Parole. She could have gotten out this Monday. Looks like she's going to be out before Christmas based on a report on Local 12's Joe Webb. And the variable to that situation was the vocational program that she was in or not in. She's completed six since she's been in prison. Each program that she completes, and they are, you know, stuff from woodworking to, she had completed a Microsoft Office program. Basically things that when you finish these programs, you're more, I guess you're more employable when you get out of prison, and which obviously lessens the chances that you're going to go back. She's completed six. She just completed a parenting class, which, or actually, she's not completed it yet. She is about ready to complete it. And when she does complete it, that basically takes 90 days off of her sentence, which, if you look at the math and the way that the state of Kentucky calculates her jail time, and this is from, I talked to Mike Cottle, who is the spokesman for the Kentucky Probation and Parole Board. By statute, Cheryl McCafferty was sentenced to 18 years in prison. She had been in prison since June of 2007, county jail and in prison. By statute, she gets 25% of that sentence cut off the day she walks in, the day she's sentenced. So that 25%, a fourth of her 18 years is automatically taken off. She, also by statute, she got 7 days per month taken off of her sentence for good behavior. They told me that she has banked, for every month that she's been in, she's banked a week, 7 days. And then the third variable to that, to how Kentucky calculates her jail time, is the vocational programs that she's completed. And she's completed six of those for 90 days each. So each program that she completed, she got 90 days off of her sentence. So that's 540 days right there. Almost 2 years taken off for vocational programs that she's completed. So all in, she has served in actual jail time 8 years, 4 months, and 25 days. That's according to the Kentucky Office of Parole and Probation. Now, this is my what I have interpreted as their rules and their statutes. Here's the math behind it. So she has served approximately 8.5 years of actual time. By statute, that 25% of her sentence is 4.5 years. The programs that she's completed, the 90-day programs of time that she gets off. She gets 90 days off for each program she's completed. She's completed seven. That's 1.7 years. Then by statute, you take off 7 days each month for good behavior, which totals 1.2 years. So in time that she has gotten off by statute, good behavior, or program, that's 7.4 years of time that she's not having to serve, but that's how the state has looked at, that's the way they look at her time, as 7.4 years plus the 8.5 that she's actually served puts her at just under 16 years, 15.9 years that she has served, or 88% of her sentence. So, I mean, she, there was never any question whether or not she killed her husband. She shot him. Whether or not he was sleeping, I mean, he was in his bed. He was defenseless. And the way that this happened, the way that she's able to get out is on a bill. And she would have gotten out. Her serve-out date was December 9th, 2016. Based on all the programs and the statute, I mean, that's the latest that she would have gotten out. But she's going to get out early. She's going to get out by Christmas because of the programs that she's done. And partly because, too, of House Bill 463. And that was passed by the Kentucky House of Representatives in 2009. So basically what that says is once you get to a certain point, a certain percentage of your time that you have served, it is not up to the jury anymore, it's not up to the parole board anymore whether or not you get out. If you hit a certain threshold, which I think it's like 75% of your sentence, or it might be less than that. But once you hit that threshold, you're automatically released. And the reason that they did that was because at the time it was seen as a successful bipartisan bill. It didn't get any nay votes. Katie Stein voted for it. Joe Fisher voted for it. And the reason that it came up was Kentucky had one of the fastest growing prison populations in the nation in 2011. And that was due in part to an increase in drug arrests. Heroin was not to the level that it is now, the scourge that it is now, but heroin was creeping into the area. And marijuana arrests were overcrowding our jails. So as a result, what Kentucky's corrections, their spending increased from $140 million in 1990 to $440 million in 2010. You asked Steve Pendry what our biggest crisis is in Campbell County, and it's overcrowding jails. I mean, the jail population, what we spend our budget on in Campbell County alone, it's a huge majority. So I understand the reason why it was implemented and why it was implemented with such success. Here's the problem that Michelle Snodgrass, who was the prosecutor on the case, this is the problem that she has with H. Bill 463. And she told this to me in an interview that, again, that I wrote. I wrote an article on this for WCPO. She said that basically that she would never have done this deal. And the deal, again, what it included was McCafferty, her defense team, wanted to, her defense this whole, throughout the whole trial was that Robert McCafferty was abusing her. That was never proved. The jury didn't believe that, but that was her defense. So when she was going to be found guilty, the prosecutor in the case, Michelle Snodgrass, made a deal that waived all of the rights for McCafferty to appeal. Appealed the decision. And in exchange for that, she would not contest the defense's motion that would characterize Cheryl McCafferty as a victim of domestic violence. So she told me, and this is her quote now, "We made it very clear at the time that she received the sentence that at no point in time was the Commonwealth acknowledging that she was a victim of domestic violence. This was merely a bargaining chip in exchange for waiving her right to an appeal. So 4 years later, after she's sentenced to 18 years, and part of the House Bill 463 gives the authority to the Commonwealth to basically mandatory reentry supervision, which is kind of like parole, but without the parole board process, that's where we are now. And, you know, she said that she would have never made that deal. If House Bill 463 was part of Kentucky law in the sentencing in 2009, she would have never made the deal. And again, this is her quote, verbatim. Quote, had H. Bill 463 been on the books at the time of the sentencing deal, the bargain would have never happened. The reason we made the deal in the first place was because it was what the family wanted. A conclusion. I can tell you that the family would never have wanted this either. They thought that they would always have their right to fight against parole, and that's been taken away. I don't think it was the legislator's intent to have this law applied to individuals that killed another person. So here we are, and again, this is my math, but my math tells me with all the deals that are in place, she served 88% of her sentence. Her sentence ended up being first degree manslaughter. So according to the Kentucky Department of Corrections, the historic percentage of time served by similar offenders is 61%. Or 10 years and 11 months. So she has passed that threshold, if my math is correct. But at the same time, you know, I think probably first degree manslaughter was another bargaining chip, really. They went after murder, which if it was murder, you're serving more than 10 years and 11 months. But the way that it played out, It played out perfectly for Cheryl McCafferty and her defense team in that, and I don't know that they did this on purpose, but by waiving the fact that she was a victim of domestic violence, by basically saying that that is what she was, that's how the Commonwealth is describing her in this scenario. She's looked at, even though she shot her husband in the head, she's looked at as nonviolent. So because she's nonviolent, she gets that mandatory reentry from House Bill 463. So she's going to get out sooner. And you know, at the worst case scenario, she was going to get out. Her serve out date again was December 9th of 2016. Mike Cottle told me, this is what he told me verbatim. He said, based upon the vocational program that she's in, he can't give me a date, but he said that she will be released between Monday, November 16th and March 9th of 2016. So the variable there is whether or not she completes the program. You look at the history, and she's completed six before, so if I had to guess, I would say she gets out around December 20th, which is in a month from today. So at that time, what will happen is she'll go under the mandatory re-entry supervision, which is basically like parole. So she'll have to check in with a parole-type officer. She will have to get her residence cleared in advance. She can live wherever she wants if it is cleared by the Commonwealth. She's going to have some provisions on and restrictions on her parole or on her release. So, Cheryl McCafferty will be out into the public next month. And then to kind of tie a ribbon on this whole thing, Michelle Snodgrass is not happy with with the outcome of this. And here's what she said. This is what she also told me. She said, the most difficult part of this is the fact that this law was not in existence at the time, she's talking about House Bill 463, that this bargain was reached between the Commonwealth and Cheryl McCafferty. The fact that the legislator changed the law at a later date and is now retroactively applying it to her is difficult to accept. Takes away the rights of the victims to fight against relief with the parole board. And basically, here's she wants the law to get changed. So she said she's going to sit down with legislators, probably, you know, assuming our Campbell County contingent, which is Will Schroeder and Joe Fisher, and see if she can get it changed. She said she can never tell a victim of crime how long the individual that victimized them will serve in prison. They get so many credits, and it doesn't matter what their sentence is, whether it comes from a jury or a plea bargain agreement. We have no idea how long they will serve, and that's very difficult to explain to victims, and it's not fair to them. So, you know, this whole situation is difficult. It's difficult for the family. It's difficult for the people involved. It's difficult for the city. But the law is the law. And she, in the eyes of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, has served her time. So that's the reason for the podcast was so that you could understand what's happening, how her time has been calculated in the eyes of the Commonwealth, what the prosecutor is saying, which I think gives a lot of insight, and maybe, you know, something on the horizon to change is at least a part of House Bill 463, which would, I guess, in this circumstance, the question is, does somebody convicted of manslaughter, whether they are described as a victim of domestic violence, which in this case she was, even though nothing was proved, is that a loophole to the 463 mandatory reentry supervision clause of the bill, and should that be changed? So that's something to look for going forward. In the next segment, we are going to talk about the editorial cartoon by Joel Pett of the Lexington Herald Leader, and that dealt with the Syrian refugee crisis that we're now thrust upon, and how his take of how it affected Kentucky. Matt Bevin came out with a statement, as did many other governors, stating that their residents were their first priority, and that they would not be opening their borders to Syrian refugees at this point. And Joel Pett, his interpretation of his editorial cartoon is one that has gotten a lot of heat. So we're going to talk about that in the next segment. Mark Collier for Thomas Matters Radio. You can always find our archives at FortThomasMatters.com or FortThomas.podbean.com, or simply type in Fort Thomas Matters to iTunes or your podcast app on iOS or Google Play.
Hello. It's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to me to go over everything. They say the time's supposed to heal you, but I ain't done much healing. Hello.
Mark Collier here for Thomas Matters Radio. How awesome is this song?
I'm in California dreaming about who
not afraid to admit that I love me some Adele. Okay, we'll listen to that down the road. But we wanted to talk about, in segment two, was the editorial cartoon that Joel Pett of the Lexington Herald Leader did in regards to the Syrian refugee crisis. Now, a little bit of background about Joel Pett. First of all, he's won an American Pulitzer Prize for editorial cartoonist in 89 and then 1998 in 2002. He also won the Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Award for cartooning. A lot of that dealt with highlighting the plight of disadvantaged. He was born in Indiana, but moved to Nigeria with his family, and he lived there for 5 years. So I think that's important to talk about because first of all, I don't agree with what he drew, and let me describe what he has drawn. So it's a picture of Matt Bevin cowering under his gubernatorial desk with an aide there with a look of I guess, astonishment. And there's pictures of Matt Bevin's children. There's three pictures on his desk. There's a map of Syria there. There is a newspaper that has a picture of the Eiffel Tower on it. And the tagline is, "Sir, they're not terrorists. They're your own adopted kids." The problem with that being, number one, first and foremost, I don't care what you think about his policies. I don't care what you think about this certain situations. And in this case, he has chosen, like many other governors have, to close their borders. You don't bring kids into this mix. You don't do it. Secondly, why it's even more disgusting in my view, Matt has six biological children. One of them passed away. He's got five living biological children, and he's got four adopted children from Ethiopia, which maybe it's just because the drawing's not very good, but I can't tell. But it looks like he's drawn some of his Ethiopian adopted children, and those are on his desk. So obviously it's a slight to, I don't really know what he's trying to get across, but the fact of the matter is this is disgusting. This drawing is disgusting. You do not, under any circumstances, bring children into the mix. I don't care what you say. And this is what Matt Bevin had to say. He said, "They say a picture is worth a thousand words. Indeed, today, the Lexington Herald Leader chose to articulate with great clarity the deplorably racist ideology of cartoonist, in quotations, Joel Pett. Shame on Mr. Pett for his deplorable attack on my children, and shame on the editorial controls that approved this overt racism. Let me be crystal clear. The tone of the racial intolerance being struck by the Herald Leader has no place in the Commonwealth of Kentucky and will not be tolerated by our administration." Now, talking about Joel Pett's background probably gives you a little bit of insight as to why he drew what he drew. Obviously, his ideologies are one in a completely different subset from what Matt Bevin believes. But the editorial component that Bevin talks about, which is, you know, Joel Pett can draw whatever he's going to draw, and at the end of the day, it's the editor's decision whether or not they're going to run it. That was probably influenced, I would say, a lot by the disdain that journalists covering Matt Bevin during the election, during the primary and the general election, namely Sam Youngman from the editorial, or for the Lexington Herald Leader, Matt Bevin wouldn't talk to him because at the end of the day, he thought that Sam was not covering him accurately or fairly. And there's a lot of credence to that. It's not just Sam Youngman. It's everybody at the Lexington Herald Leader. You know, they've got newspapers to sell in a pretty liberal environment. And so when they write those stories, you're not going to get as much pushback as you would in a generally conservative Northern Kentucky or Western and now Eastern Kentucky, which has turned red. But in this sense, the editorial board should have caught it. They didn't. And it probably had something to do with Matt Bevin not talking to them during the election, which was their own undoing. You know, I can speak to this, and this fires me up more than anything, because I have had somebody in Fort Thomas who has brought my children to the forefront of some issues. It was actually before they were born. He is now almost 17 months. But this person didn't agree with how we were covering a topic or an issue, and indirectly wished, no, not even indirectly, directly wished harm on my unborn child. It's gross. And I promise you I won't let that go. I never will. One day the story will get out. And when that happens, you know, I don't know what my reason for saying this is I know how Matt Bevin feels right now. And I know how pissed off he is. And at this point, he's drawing a line in the sand. And basically has said, hey, if you're going to align yourself with this type of mentality, this racist mentality for him, for me it was a different issue, but if you're going to bring my children into this, that's ball game. That's a game changer. And it's not something I'll ever forget. It's not something hopefully I'll forgive one day. But Joel Pett from the Lexington Herald Leader, shame on you, man. That's gross. Take it back. Get it off your website, Lexington Herald Leader. And if you don't, you reap what you sow. You know, it gives all media a bad name. Not everybody pays attention to what is being published and where. You know, I'm sure that people that never pick up a newspaper or never go online to read the news, I'm sure they've seen the cartoon. And you know, they're not going to know it's just Lexington Herald Leader. They're going to look at all media outlets as deplorable. It's gross. It's disgusting. Joel Pett, shame on you. You never bring a kid up into it. Never. Let alone in this situation with adopted kids that look differently than Matt Bevin. So Matt Bevin, kudos to you for denouncing this so emphatically and quickly. And I hope that the Lexington Herald Leader and other media outlets learn this lesson. And I know that I'm probably coming off as angry journalism guy, but this has directly affected me before. And one day, again, the story will come out. I'm not ready to tell it at this point, but just know that, you know, we're all neighbors at the end of the day, and the things that you say cannot be unsaid, and the things that you say do have consequences, and it's unfortunate that this happened today and that this has happened in the past, and hopefully it doesn't happen again. With that, we're going to end the Fort Thomas Matters Radio podcast today. You can always see our archives at FortThomasMatters.com or FortThomasMatters.podbean.com, or simply just type in Fort Thomas Matters into iTunes, your podcast app on iOS 8, iPhone or Google Play. This is For Thomas Matters Radio, and this is Mark Collier.